Welcome, everybody. This is Mordechai Plotzker. Welcome to the Nightly Shir, shirenjoyment.com. Tonight's shir is on Parshas Toldos, and there's so much to talk about, so we'll try to keep it high level. This essentially is a discussion about the planning and preparation of a sumptuous meal, which actually takes place on Pesach, and the aftermath of the blessing to an individual that was not intended to receive it, as well as to an individual that was intended, and how all of this plays out in the future parshios, Vayetze, of course, Vayishlach, Vayeshev, everything that transcends from this momentous event. So obviously we know that Yitzchak and Rivka, this is all also about a topic of conversation and communication between husband and wife, between Rivka and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, between the children, and of course between the parents and their dialogue with their children, their relationship with the children. So to begin, the first is between the two parents. We know that they were very much polar opposites. They came from totally different families. One came from, was a Ben Tzaddik, and Rivka came from the house of Lavan and Besuel. Besuel got his name because he was Boel Besuel before Erison, so that's not a nice way to ingratiate yourself to the world. And Lavan, as we all know, is the great rabbi, and Lavan is also, some people say, Zebulun, the same neshama was carried over. But when we talk about the two sides, we say that Rivka loved Yaakov and Yitzchak loved Esav. So it's not a big deal to tell us that Rivka loved Yaakov because she grew up in a house where she saw everything but a Yaakov. And then she was exposed to someone so pure and beautiful, Ishtan Yeshev Olam, so it made sense. But Yitzchak, to love Esav, is problematic. How is that possible? Well, some say Kitzai Fiv, because he was very careful in the way he spoke to his father in a dubious manner, asking how to give maestros on salt and straw, which we all know Chazal tell us are not required. But since Yitzchak may have thought that he was very interested in keeping these halachos, which was not the case. The other side of the coin is that Yitzchak was very much aware about his son, and he perhaps entertained such questions like these in order to draw him close. And that's a lesson that I saw from Rabbi Sachs, of where if you have two children, one is on the derech and one is off the derech, then you try to bring the one who's off the derech closer by expressing your love for him. There's yet a third explanation, and that Esav, the name Esav and Yaakov, were really meant to be the first Yisachar Zevulun relationship, where one would provide for the other. As my chavrusa, Rabbi Ron Bakanov, likes to say, that Esav is the language of asu, which is to do, to complete. And so Esav would be the one to build the planes, trains, automobiles, mass forms of communication in order for Yaakov to transmit that information, which is Torah, to the world and sustain the world. And so therefore the relationship would be, so long as one upholds their side of the bargain, the other one would do his share as well. But the issue would arise if Chas v'Shalom Yaakov would not fulfill the Torah mitzvos, then Esav would ask, why are we doing all of this work? And that could create a global war. That could create a great upheaval. So therefore, we have a tremendous responsibility to uphold our side of the bargain in order for our brothers on the other side of the river, so to speak, to uphold their side of the deal. And then we transition over to Rivka Imenu. For example, we know that Rivka received three nevuos in the sixth parasha. We may or may not be aware of them, but they are Vatelchu Joshua Hashem at the onset. Next is Vayishma, Rivka Shama'as, that Rivka overheard a conversation that Yitzchak was having with Esav, sending him out to bring back some food. And then the third is Vayugad LeRivka, which is that she was told. She says, Malach told her what is in the heart of Esav, that he wants to kill Yaakov. On all of these three episodes that we see about Rivka, she receives the Nevuah. Yitzchak is not privy to these types of Nevuahs. And so therefore we can argue that although Yitzchak is a Ben Tzaddik, Rivka, being a Tzaddikus, Bas Arasha, rose to a very high level of Nevuah. And so when she received these Nevuahs, she acted upon them. First is to understand what exactly is happening with her pregnancy. And Chazal Rabbeinu Bachya brings down that this refers to two nations that will be at odds with each other, right? But then also, we know Rabbeinu Bachya brings down the great relationship that Mark Antoninus had with Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. They were both best of friends. both very wealthy individuals and both individuals that were interested in learning. In fact, Antoninus was very careful not to reveal to his soldiers about the fact that when he would visit Rav Yehuda HaNasi, he would spend time learning from him. And there was a great appreciation and friendship between these two men, even though they represented the Yaakov and Esav of their time. So that's one level. And then Verifko Shamas, right? So she hears something and she goes into motion. And so the rest of the time that we have together, I'm going to try to bring out how Rivka took upon herself tremendous burden and in the form of communication to her son, later on to her husband about what should be done with her son, and in between, how do we deal with the bracha that was given, the Yitin Lecha. So with that, we begin. Shema b'nei Musa avicha v'atitosh Torah simecha. Rivka imenu tells her son that you must do what I say. Wait, says Yaakov, Ishtam Yoshev Olam, he's an MS. Yaakov is fully truthful. Ulai Yimusheni Avi, how can I do something? And then it will come upon me something other than a bracha, he says to his mother. Says Rivka Imenu, Alai Kelafcha Bnei, I share that burden with you. I will take this upon myself. Says the Vilna Gaon, the word Alai is Rosh Tevos, Esav, Lavan, and Yosef. In Esav, you will have to deal in Parshas Vayishlach, Lavan, next week's Parsha, Vayetze, and Yosef in Vayeshev. All the Vais. The Vais come along with a lot of heavy doses. Vai, vai, vai. Oy, vei, vei. This is what Yaakov has to deal with. But, alai kelafcha b'nei, the mother shares that burden, takes it upon herself, and releases a lot of the stress and tension. And that would otherwise be shouldered strictly on Yaakov's shoulders, and she takes it upon herself in order to mitigate that pressure. So that's true for all our mothers. Our mothers are fantastic, wonderful people. And, you know, if we have them, we can give them a call and tell them how much we love them. And if we don't, we can always visit Beis HaChaim and tell them once again how much they mean to us. But the mothers are the ones that take on that responsibility. And for that, we have to be eternally grateful. The second point that I wanted to mention is the actual bracha itself. He says, Hakol kol Yaakov ha'idayim yidei Esav. He must have been aware who was there, because if you hear my voice, you can recognize that this is Mordechai Plotzker, Morty Plotzker, speaking to you. But if you touch my arm and you recognize something unusual, you would say, yeah, Hakol kol Yaakov, Aydaim de Esav. To this, Chazal say, Eile barachav, eile basusim, v'anachnu b'shem Hashem nazkir, that they have their chariots and horses, but we have our voices. Our voices are more powerful. That the tefillah of Yaakov is so powerful that it cannot be upset. There's nothing that can stop us when we sit together and we cry, especially the Dvar Torah that I said back when we talked about Banitzak al Hashem. We cried out to Hashem. Hashem heard our plea. When it says, Hatzak, Hasabai, when anyone cries out to Hashem, the daughter of Lot, when she went through being feathered and tarred and crying out in Sodom and Gomorrah just for the simple crime of giving someone a loaf of bread, surely, even if there were 50, 45, 40, down to 10, it wouldn't make a difference. My chiddush was then, and it is tonight, that it doesn't make a difference. I'm going to make Avraham a great person, but at the end of the day, this little girl trumps all, because her voice went right up to the Kisei HaKavod. And no matter what tefillah you have, nothing is more powerful than the solemn cry of a young girl. And that's just a standalone thought. Now, we go back into the parsha with the bracha itself. We know that when Yitzhak is presented by Yaakov, he tells him that this is Kireh Chasada, and Rashi tells us that this Reh Chasada is Gan Eden, that he walked in with the Malachi Asharis. And this actually was a complete revelation to Yitzhak on two fronts. Number one, it was the first time since the Akedah that Yitzhak had experienced something so powerful, being face-to-face with Malachim. He hasn't seen that since the Akedah, because the Malachim were so close that they cried tears into his eyes and singed his retina so that he wasn't able to see. But even more importantly, the chiddush of my Rebbe, Rav Moshe Deva Temler, on this parsha, is that this is the culmination of a tremendous disagreement between the two parents. Rivka believed that Yaakov, to be influential, needed to have more than just simple ruchnias of Olam Haba. He needed to have a taste of Olam Hazeh. He needed to have some form of gashmius as well. Yitzchak, however, was under the belief that it wasn't necessary. Yaakov Vino should have his Dalai Lama Shatzorah, and inherit the next world, whereas Esav, which is to do, will inherit this world, Olam Hazeh, through his completion of tasks that would be necessary for Yaakov to be successful in his kibush, his conquering of the next world. So when Yaakov is presented and he's walking together with the Malachi Asharis, this created a stark revelation for Yitzchak, understanding that his wife was right all along, that his wife was right, that he needed to have more than just the Ruchnius, he needed to have Gashnius as well. Now, when Esav comes in to be greeted by his father and ask for this blessing, he comes in with Gehenim. Just take a look at Rashi. I don't need to quote that it's actually sourced to Rabbeinu Bachya. I don't need to quote the fact that Rabbeinu Bachya is actually sourcing this to the Zohar HaKadosh. It's all consistent throughout all the Midrashim that I've come across. He comes in with Gehenim. And what does that mean? Imagine, Kav Yochel, if you're taking a shower and the water is very warm and hot and pleasant, and then someone starts running the water and it's a harsh, cold water that hits you really hard. This is exactly the type of fright. He never experienced anything like this before, and it was frightening to him because he's a Karban Olah. What does Yitzchak know from Gehenim? He's an Ish Kadosh. He lived the full 180 years. He would never left Eretz Yisrael. He was a person that was an Olah, and in fact, the Chazal bring down that at the Akedah, he turned into a ghoul, which is he was ashen gray. He looked like a dead person because his body actually left him. His neshama came back, but his body never fully restored from the Akedah. So Yitzchak was an Ish Kadosh, and he took this as a very stark. That's why the pasuk says, "Vayechra Yitzchak Charada Gedola Ad Ma'od." How many different ways can you describe someone feeling uncomfortable? There's a Vayechra, he trembled. Charada Gedola Ad Ma'od. This was a tremendous, tremendous shock. It could have killed him, but it just, thank God, didn't. But it was so strong, and that meant that it was not intended for Esav. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending Malachim to tell Yitzchak that this is the right messaging. And even though, Chazal say, Yitzchak was unhappy for a brief moment when he recognized Yaakov, he still gave him the bracha because it reminded him of Gan Eden, and he saw the Malachim there, and he knew that he had to keep blessed. But when he saw Esav, he felt otherwise. Now, we go back into the blessing itself. This is not a blessing that was originally designed for a Yaakov, because it doesn't have anything in it that resembles Kedusha. It does not say that you should be Anshe Emes, Sonei Betza, Yiri Elokim. It doesn't say anything Ruchnius related. It strictly is Gashmius, because according to Yitzchak, this bracha was really designed in his mind for an Esav. But then there's a second issue that we have with this bracha, and that is that it says Vitim Lecha Elokim. Elokim. And you translate this, not the way art school does, but just try to take a step back, peel back the onion for another second, and understand what does it mean, Elokim? That means gods, right? Does that mean that God forbid there stay the Shrios? No. There's one HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But what this refers to is, as Mechavusa Rabban Bakov explains, that Vitamecha Elokim Nital HaShemayim, I will give over to you the Knesset Yisrael, the Beis Yaakov, the Bnei Yaakov, the realm, the authority, to have jurisdiction, to have governance over the Mesharsei Shemayim V'aretz, the celestial bodies. What are they? The water. For example, Moshe Rabbeinu goes to Yamsov V'Gzarim. Every Shevet went in their own path through Kriyas Yamsov. They don't all walk together. They had 12 separate tunnels, and the sea split. But the sea to split is a miraculous thing, because the sea, so there are, Achaim HaKadosh explains, Parshas B'Shalach, hey, don't bring your dead bodies into my water, and if you do, I'm going to split them out. You know why? Because the result that brought Misa into the world occurred on land through what we know as the Eitz HaDaas. So don't tell me that you have a safe passage in water. That's why the sea always spits out dead bodies, because it says, I don't need them here. They belong buried in the ground, not inside the ocean. And that's why the sea is also arrogant, spoke back to Moshe, because it was created, Baruch Kahim Azza, as we know in Parshas Bereishis, and Azza means a strong easterly wind. But say Chazal, Baruch Kadim Azza is also Azza's Parim, that also has a form of arrogance toward mankind in general, And HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to temper it. And how did Hashem do that? By Vnei Sohocho, by Abasha, B'Sochayam, Hashem took away the H2O, separated the hydrogen and oxygen, and made it into dry land, not just simply mud or ice or sleet or snow or even some form of precipitation, but rather dry land itself in order to break the water. And when the Yam started singing Shira, right, so then the Yam didn't know what to do with itself, and then Hashem broke it again. Masa Bereshis happened all over again in Bereshis and Parshas Peshach. I divert myself in the conversation, and we have to go back into the text again. And now we conclude with this understanding that the bracha was given over to Yaakov in order for him to actually be, it was given Baruch HaKodesh. It was intended for Esav, but when it was delivered to Yaakov, it was given over Baruch HaKodesh, such that the children of Yaakov, Moshe specifically, can break the water, and secondly, have governance over that water to break it again, bring back the Mayim, and second, by Yehoshua in the Battle of Ai, to have the sun sit still on other tremendous celestial bodies in order for Bnei Yisrael to overcome the battle of the 31 kings in the Battle of Ai. And that demonstrates how we, Klal Yisrael, have a super level governance, authority over the Mishra Sishamayim of the Arts. We can actually dictate terms if we're on such a level to do so. So then we understand why, oh boy, I'm over by a few minutes, but if you have to go, you have to go. But I just wanted to close out with one final thought, and that is that at the tail end of the parsha, we see that Rivka takes the nevuah and moves it forward to protect Yaakov's life. But when she does so, does not reveal to her husband, Yitzchak, the reason for sending him away so fast. She says, "Kasi bechayay levnos chayz. I don't want my son marrying anybody local. He needs to find someone from my family. He needs to find someone from the daughters of Lavan, my brother, Rachel and Leah. He has to find someone there." But really, she understood that there's something else that's going on. There's an undercurrent. If Yaakov stays here one more night, there's a good chance and probability that he won't survive because Esav wants to kill him. But she can't say this to her husband, so she does it in a very delicate way. And she says that he needs a shirach. And then he goes on his way, and he forgives him the bracha, and he leaves. This is the greatness of Rivka. As my mother would always say, and Baruch Hashem, she continues to say, that a wise person knows what to say, and a smart person knows whether to say it. Rivka demonstrated a certain skill set that enabled her to be very careful in how she communicated messaging to her husband, and how she communicated messaging to her son, and getting him to do what he needed to do in order to get this bracha. And of course, this is the Yad Hashem that permeates throughout, seeing that the Malachim are present when Yaakov enters, and that the Gehenna enters when Esav enters the room. So, in summation, I think that Toldos is a game-changing parsha for Bereshis. It sets in motion Yaakov, as we know, that wherever he goes, there is a blessing that follows him. And it should be the will of Hashem that wherever we go, we should bring blessings and peace and happiness and joy and simcha in the same way that Yaakov brought to wherever he touched. It should be golden. We should have the bracha v'atzlacha. Whatever we touch should also turn golden, and we should only be blessed with hatzlacha, parnasa tova, hatzlacha, gezeirah nachas, everything good. This is Mordechai Plasker wishing you the very best, and have a wonderful, successful week.